From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Talk about a tough act to follow. Alan Greenspan is ending his 18-year reign as head of the Federal Reserve at the end of January. His heir apparent, President Bush's freshly minted nominee as Fed chairman, is a White House economic advisor and former Princeton economics professor named Ben Bernanke. In the Oval Office yesterday, Bernanke's first pledge was to follow in the footsteps of the master central banker.
Our understanding of the best practice in monetary policy evolved during Alan Greenspan's tenure at the Fed, and it will continue to evolve in the future. However, if I am confirmed to this position, my first priority will be to maintain continuity with the policies and policy strategies established during the Greenspan years.
Bernanke is widely respected. You have to look hard to find someone who has bad things to say about the new nominee. But he takes the helm of the U.S. economy at a time of profound change and challenge, record deficits, relentless globalization, threatening inflation. This hour on Point, Greenspan, Bernanke, and the challenges to the U.S. economy now. We begin in Washington with Greg Ipp, staff reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He's been following the Fed and the Fed chairman for a long time. Greg Ipp, thanks for being with us. What's the response in Washington and the markets to Ben Bernanke?
Hi, Tom. The response has been extremely positive. People on Wall Street have been singing his praises, calling him things like competent, experienced, just the right person, a good choice. And in Washington, the response has been very good, and I might add from both sides of the aisles. You have people like Richard Shelby and Robert Bennett, both of them Republicans on the Senate Banking Committee, which will be in charge of the confirmation hearings. They're saying they like the experience of this guy. Bennett predicted the odds are he'll be confirmed. But you also have people like Chuck Schumer and Paul Sarbanes, also Democrats on the committee, saying good things. I mean, one thing's for sure, this is not looking at all, at least at this point, like a Harriet Myers type of situation.
Ben Bernanke is chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, has been for the past 6 months, been a governor of the Federal Reserve Bank for the past couple of years. But the chairmanship of the Council of Economic Advisors, what does that mean about how close he is to President Bush, how close he is to President Bush's ideology or politics?
Well, clearly it means that he is a part of the Bush team and that he fundamentally agrees with the broad thrust of Bush's policies. And in fact, even though he's only been there since June, Bernanke has given quite a few speeches and testimonies as chairman of the CEA where he has thrown himself full square behind the main Bush policies, such as the tax cuts and reforming Social Security. That said, he has enough of a history prior to his tenure at the White House that I think most people are giving him the benefit of the doubt with respect to his independence of thought. And perhaps more important, he has indicated that if he becomes Fed chairman, he is not going to, at least initially, follow the mold of Alan Greenspan and comment extensively on non-Fed-related matters. We might be in for a period where the Fed chairman more or less just sticks to monetary and banking policy.
Though all the rest is going to be swirling around him, Ben Bernanke is being called the John Roberts style nomination for the Fed chairmanship. What can you tell us about his background, Greg?
It would be difficult to find an individual, certainly an academic individual, with a stronger resume for precisely this job. I mean, Bernanke quite literally wrote the book or the books on central banking, on issues like the Great Depression and how the Fed contributed to it. He's made enormous contributions in the field of econometrics, which is the highly technical field of using math and statistics to try and understand movements in the overall economy. He's a pretty quick study. I mean, his parents, his friends, they all talk about how fast he learned when he was a kid, continued to learn when he was on the Federal Reserve. He has pretty good political skills, and by political I mean in a sort of a small P sense, where he seems to work well with small groups, whether it's the school board of his town in New Jersey that he served on for 6 years, or whether it's on the 19-member Federal Open Market Committee.
And what about the challenges that he comes in facing? What's seen at the top of that list, Greg?
Tom, I think he's certainly not going to get much of a honeymoon because there are some big challenges facing him. The first is obviously inflation. It was 4.7% in September. That's the highest since the early 1990s. That's almost entirely due to higher energy prices, and when you take out that effect, inflation remains quite low. His main job will be making sure that that energy bubble does not work its way into the underlying fabric of prices and wages. And that might require continuing the policy of raising interest rates that Alan Greenspan began last June. And he may actually feel additional pressure to tighten even further because as the new guy, people will question his experience, his ability, and his independence, and he might have to work harder to assert his bona fides.
And what about the wider issues that Alan Greenspan, increasingly in the later years of his tenure, began to talk about, if sometimes tangentially, about deficits, about tax policy? Can a chairman of the Federal Reserve do his job without some interaction with those bigger policies?
Tom, it is very difficult to not talk at all about these issues because so many non-monetary issues do influence what's going on in the economy and the Fed's job. I mean, if the federal government is running a large budget deficit, then that obviously poses a risk to interest rates, and that's something that the Federal Reserve chairman is going to have to think about and probably talk about. I think what you're going to see is Mr. Bernanke trying to stick to generalities on these issues, whereas Mr. Greenspan would sometimes really get deep into the nitty-gritty about what sort of plan you would use to reform Social Security, which type of tax cut was superior to other types of tax cuts, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's all good in theory, of course, but, you know, when you get up there in Congress, you can't stop people from asking you these more detailed questions. I mean, in this country, we don't have a national chief economist, and it's kind of a job that in practice falls to the Fed chairman. I think, especially as the years go by, and if Mr. Bernanke establishes a reputation for competence and believability, he's going to find himself being asked more and more to weigh in on these important questions.
Alan Greenspan came in 18 years ago and had his baptism of fire with the stock market crash within a couple months of arriving. Do you see icebergs of that scale out there for Ben Bernanke if he's confirmed?
Yeah, it seems like a reasonably good prediction that sometime over the next 4 to 8 years there's going to be a big turmoil in the markets of one form or another. I mean, Tom, we have record trade deficits, the likes of which the developed world hasn't seen in half a century, and who knows how long we can continue to finance them by borrowing from foreigners. I mean, many people have warned that at some point we're basically inviting a run on the dollar or a run on our bond market. It's going to be up to Mr. Bernanke and his colleagues to try and do their best to ensure that investors do not lose confidence in the United States markets. And really, if there was one major shortcoming in his resume, it's that he hasn't had that hands-on experience dealing with markets, dealing with day-to-day businesses, and responding quickly in a crisis situation. But, you know, truth be told, I don't think Greenspan really had that experience either when he first joined in 1987. He benefited from a good team, people like Jerry Corrigan, who was the president of the New York Fed at the time. And as I mentioned, Bernanke's a fast learner. So even if he doesn't have that crisis management experience now, the odds are probably pretty good that he can pick it up.
No bed of roses he's inheriting, but then it never is. Greg, finally, a last thought on the Greenspan legacy.
Greenspan has left behind a remarkable legacy, a period in which we brought inflation down to its lowest level since the 1950s and the 1960s. We brought, in spite of a couple of recessions, both of them mild, we brought unemployment down to about 5%. And we saw productivity growth accelerate. Most Americans are richer today than they were 18 years ago. Stock market is significantly higher. And even though people criticize him for meddling too much in non-monetary matters, I mean, most of the advice people do believe was, in the end, good, sound advice. But he does leave some problematic legacies. We have these big trade deficits I mentioned. We may have a housing bubble. Not hard to tell, but we might have a housing bubble. That's something we may have to grapple with in coming years. So it's not possible to write the final legacy, I think, of Alan Greenspan, but I'd say the early reviews look pretty good.
Greg, thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Greg Yip, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He spoke with us from Washington. Joining me now is the celebrated economist, Nobel laureate, and professor emeritus of economics at MIT, Robert Solow. Professor Solow, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Of course, Ben Bernanke got his PhD in your esteemed institution. What do you make of this nominee to take over the Fed?
Well, there can't be any question about competence. Ben Bernanke was a graduate student here in the late 70s, beginning around 1975 or 1976. This is a tough department to shine in. We get pretty good graduate students. He was clearly from the very beginning at the top. I still remember him as a student. He had a lot more hair on top of his head and a lot less hair
maybe
at
less
the bottom,
beard.
At the bottom of his head. But he was very smart. He graduated from Harvard as an undergraduate with highest honors, and he moved right ahead. He knows monetary theory, I may say, in a way that Alan Greenspan didn't. He knows the literature, and he is research-oriented. he's going to be extremely good at the job. And I say that, although in some respects, I disagree with some of his attitudes or principles.
Such as?
About monetary policy. Well, let me say this. If you ask me about Alan Greenspan's legacy, I'd say that the key thing was he's very flexible, very non-doctrinaire, no way of predicting in advance what he was going to do. He was very good at holding back judgment until the last minute, sniffing the air, seeing which way the wind is blowing.
Famously good.
Moving in what seemed like the right direction, and then sniffing the air again.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, from his writings and some of the talks that he's given, is much more given to prior commitments. He, for instance, is in favor of what's called inflation targeting, the notion that the Fed ought to have an explicit target for inflation.
That everyone would know, that everybody would see as his goal.
That everyone would know and everyone would see, and that because it's so explicit, the Fed just has to do its best to hit as close as possible.
Robert Solow, Nobel laureate in economics, professor at MIT, please stand by. We have to take a short break here. We'll be right back. We're talking about the new Fed chairman nominee, Ben Bernanke, and the Greenspan legacy. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the changing of the guard at the Fed, about Alan Greenspan, the new nominee as Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, and the future of the U.S. economy. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Are you concerned we may have inflation at the door as Alan Greenspan heads out? And are you worried about painfully higher interest rates as Ben Bernanke heads in? Will you miss the deadpan oracle of the Fed, Greenspan the Sphinx? Will you miss the economy he guided? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be joined in a moment from Washington by E.J. Dionne and Philip Swagel. We're joined right now from MIT by Professor Emeritus of Economics there, Robert Solow, 1987 Nobel Prize winner for economics. Long ago, 61 to 63, a senior economist himself with President John F. Kennedy's Council of Economic Advisors. And Professor Solow, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you there, but you were looking at the Greenspan legacy and how Bernanke's likely to take it in his own direction.
Well, eventually, gradually, as I said, he has said that he's a believer in an explicit inflation target for the Fed, which would more or less limit it to aiming to hit that inflation rate.
And what's the significance of that? Does it make it more easier for him to be played by the markets if they know what he's aiming for?
I don't think it's so much the interaction between him and the market. In fact, in a way, his relationship with the securities markets will be a lot better because there is less opportunity to try to outguess, to think in advance, what are they going to do at the next open market committee meeting and make a bet on that. You'll sort of know what he's going to do, what's going to happen at the next open market committee meeting. I think the disadvantage of the inflation targeting approach is that there are times when other goals for the economy, like the level of output or the unemployment rate or something like that, should really get a little more weight than they would with an exclusive focus on a single inflation target. But we'll have to see how that works out in practice. Keep in mind that Ben Bernanke is an extraordinarily intelligent guy and very research-minded. He will look at what the research says. And the Fed, the Federal Reserve Board in Washington, has a research division of a couple hundred really good people. And he will, I think, perhaps a little more than, maybe considerably more than Alan Greenspan, will be looking at what comes out of their research.
You're a professor. You would admire that. But Alan Greenspan seems to have done pretty well with his sniffing and with his gut, his impromptu response to the economy. Will Bernanke be flexible enough to be as pragmatic and flexible as Greenspan?
That we're going to have to see. I'm, in many respects, on the Greenspan side here. I think he was a superb central banker. I'm one of those people who objected to his interference in non-monetary policy things.
That is, tax policy. He was very big in supporting President Bush on the cuts.
And I think excessively political. When in the Clinton administration, Greenspan's advice or warning was be fiscally responsible. In the Bush administration, he seemed to have lost that. I think it's better, and I think Ben Bernanke will do it better, for the Fed chairman to keep his paws off of those things to the extent that he can. He can express opinions about the economy, but less pronunciamentos on non-monetary policy.
Robert Solow, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation a couple more voices. First, from Bethesda, Maryland, E.J. Dionne is with us, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, syndicated columnist, a professor at the Georgetown Public Policy Institute. E.J., thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, and an honor to be with Professor Solow, a great economist who cares about social justice. That's a nice thing.
An honor for us all. And joining us from Chevy Chase, Maryland, Philip Swagel is with us, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, former Chief of Staff for the White House Council of Economic Advisors under President George W. Bush. Philip Swagel, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.
E.J. Dionne, first to you. Here's the nominee, Ben Bernanke. He has just been chairman, I guess remains chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. Now he's headed very likely for the chairmanship of the Fed. What do you think of it?
Well, I think that he's going to face a lot of questions. I think Professor Solow was absolutely right to raise this issue of explicit inflation targets. It's going to be a very interesting debate because that's an issue that actually unites a certain kind of economic liberal and certain kinds of supply-side conservatives, both of whom worry that explicit inflation targets could hamper growth and also give the Fed chairman less flexibility when he needs it. My colleague George Will this morning quoted a great Greenspan line when he said, "If I have made myself clear, I have misspoken."
Right.
And there was something about Greenspan's opaque flexibility that could actually work in his favor. I think the other question about Mr. Bernanke is, given his strong support before he got this appointment for President Bush's tax policies, is he in fact going to be less interventionist as a professor in politics, as Professor Solow and I suspect both hope, or will he intervene more? It's been said on your show earlier, I think Greg said it, that he has been compared to John Roberts. And I guess, as President Clinton would say, it depends on what the meaning of the John Roberts metaphor is. Clearly, he's highly qualified. Clearly, he's very intelligent. He's also a conservative, and the question is, how conservative will he be as Fed chairman?
Philip Swagel, how about it? What political fingerprints do you see here? Do you see President Bush seeking out a Fed chairman who's also an ideological soulmate or a policy soulmate within monetary policy and perhaps beyond?
Well, you know, ideologically, very broadly, yes. I mean, obviously the president wants someone he's comfortable with at the Fed, someone who's oriented toward a free market perspective, and obviously Mr. Bernanke is that. But it wasn't an ideological pick in the same way that a Supreme Court is. It doesn't have the same sort of, you know, direct impact on social policy. Obviously it matters a lot, but it's not, you know, so in that sense it's not quite the same. It's more of a technocratic appointment. You know, I would say, I'm just thinking of what the others have said. Mm. I would expect Mr. Bernanke to speak out on other issues, and the main issue I'd expect him to keep speaking out on is national saving, and that gets into both the deficits and also into the current account and our trade deficit. Mm.
E.J., you've written today in the Washington Post, you said this nomination ought to spur a broader debate on not just what the markets are thinking, but also on what is happening to Americans who do not find themselves at the top of the heap. What are you pointing to there?
Well, I think, just look at the news from GM, which I think is an extreme case of something that's happening all over the economy, that a lot of people, particularly in manufacturing jobs, particularly in blue-collar jobs, who used to be able to count on both a decent income and fixed pensions and decent health care are seeing all of that squeezed. And if you look at the president's approval rate on the economy, on the one hand, there are a lot of good economic numbers out there. On the other hand, I think those numbers reflect the fact that an awful lot of people feel squeezed and feel that more burdens, more risk is being thrown on the individual, less risk is being taken either by the corporation through pension and medical benefits or by the government. And so we don't name new Fed chairs very often. And while the Fed is only part of the mechanism that controls the economy, we have tended to endow the Fed with almost magical powers under Greenspan, so that when you name a new Fed chair, it really is a very good time to debate broader economic policy. And that's true whether or not Mr. Bernanke wants to speak out on all those issues or not.
Robert Solow, how far do you see the influence of a Fed chairman extending? As E.J. says, once they're in there, they have a fairly tremendous aura. How wide is the writ, explicit or implicit, in what this man will influence?
Well, I agree with what E.J. Dionne was saying there. A lot depends on, you have to create your own aura. You're not born with that aura. Look, what the Fed can do and what Ben Bernanke has at his disposal as an effective chairman is he can control short-term interest rates, period. That's what the Fed can accomplish. The rest, if we do have the kind of debate that was just suggested and which I would love to see, then Bernanke can weigh in. He's entitled to have opinions. He is, of course, a conservative. If he weren't a conservative, he wouldn't have been appointed to the job. But he's more than just a conservative. But he can weigh in. He can. This is what economists call the open mouth policy. He can talk about things, and we ought to be discussing them. But when it comes to business, to meetings of the Open Market Committee, that's what he can do. He can control short-term interest rates and, to that extent, have a real influence on the immediate strength of the economy. He can slow it down if the inflation threat seems dominant. He can speed it up if the economy is slack. Could I say a little about that inflation business?
Yes, please, because we're all wondering exactly what his autonomy will be. Deficits grow. The Chinese hold so much American debt right now. Pretty soon our interest rates seem to be, I don't know, welded into dynamics that may be beyond the power of the Fed chairman.
Well, the Fed certainly has lost power over interest rates as the weight of the world economy has grown. So far as inflation is concerned, much of the uptick that we've seen, all of the uptick that we've seen, is energy related. The Fed cannot deal with energy prices by small changes in short-term interest rates. The Fed's worry is that the initial rise in prices that the energy situation has brought about not spill over into wages and other costs so that you begin to have a spiral going.
But, of course, that leaves homeowners and car owners paying for their heating bills and their higher bills at the pump without a commensurate rise in wages.
That's right. And so the natural tendency is to try to make it up in wages. And then, of course, oil prices would rise further. The wage earner and the driver, the car driver, doesn't have any choice here. The energy price increase is imposed by the world economy and the oil producing countries, and it's to the disadvantage of Americans. All I think the Fed can do is try to see that this not develop into a self-generating spiral of wages, costs, and prices. So far, fingers crossed, there's no sign of that.
Not
in our economy. Cash wages have not been going up. Labor costs have gone up a little, but that's been mostly health care costs and things like that.
So not core inflation, as they call it.
That's right. And I would expect I think that's what Bernanke was trying to communicate, the immediate policy is going to be continue the Fed's policy of gradual increases in short-term interest rates, which have not yet shown themselves in mortgage rates or long-term rates generally.
But, there are some strong winds blowing out there. I want to begin to bring our callers in here. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Mike is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Mike.
This is interesting here because you just talked about inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And inflation is not caused by wage earners or consumers or business. It's caused by the government, the Federal Reserve, accommodating the money supply. In a natural state, inflation would take care of itself.
Take care of itself, but I mean, how about oil? How about all kinds of influences?
Well, all those things, we exist as a society, as a successful society, because we are a free market, and we've pretty much created our culture that way because of that. And every time we interfere, in other words, the Federal Reserve has done a tremendous job in the last 20 years doing what it does. I mean, Alan Greenspan has been magnificent at juking and jiving the market and getting people to sort of follow in line. But in reality, what the Federal Reserve does is ameliorate risk for the larger entities, the big businesses, and in other words, making it safe for them to continue business in spite of the reality of the market.
Of course, little guys don't like inflation so much either once it comes. What are you driving at, Mike?
Well, we're dragged along in this scheme. In other words, big business cannot deal with inflation. They can adjust their prices, but we're tagging along, having to scramble to make up for that.
What's your bottom line, Mike?
Well, the bottom line is the Federal Reserve should be sort of an autopilot like Milton Friedman suggested a number of years ago, where the real risk of the market expresses itself and we adjust to the real market rather than waiting too long, and then the little guy really receives the brunt of the risk in the end.
Well, we've got it. No more juking and jiving. You want autopilot. Thanks for calling, Mike. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Philip Swagel, how about it? Autopilot at the Federal Reserve? Could that work?
No, I don't think anyone's going to go back to that sort of strict monetary rule, an autopilot rule. I mean, I think what we'll see is a move toward more communication and more transparency. And it's like what was said at the top of the hour, that markets and the general public are going to understand better how Mr. Bernanke sees the economy, how he'll react to different events, and in some sense have a better idea of what the Federal Reserve is going to do. There won't be as much guessing.
Tom, could I say something?
EJ, please, yes.
I think the caller reflects a very strongly held view. The problem is you can reach price stability at 4% unemployment or at 25% unemployment, as the Great Depression showed us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have become more interventionist over the years, both through policies outside the Fed and through the Fed, because we don't want to take those kind of risks with people's lives and with the economy. It took some very strong action by Greenspan and Robert Rubin and others to deal with foreign debt crises. It took strong action to keep the 87 crash from becoming a complete catastrophe. And so while I admire the caller's philosophical consistency, I'd rather have messy intervention that prevents great catastrophe.
EJ, a final thought from you. I know we have to let you go in just a second here. One act, Greenspan, you say, will mar his tenure, the record of it, when he said at the beginning of the Bush administration there was ample room for tax cuts. Now we see the deficits we've got. So does Greenspan go away with a bruise there?
Well, I think so. I suppose he doesn't go away with a bruise from the point of view of President Bush or supporters of that tax cut. But as Professor Solow said earlier, there was a real inconsistency here, and that's a case where his ideology, not his economic management, was speaking, I think, that with the Democrats in power, Greenspan, the former follower of Ayn Rand, said, well, gee, I don't want them doing all this spending, so we got to push for a balanced budget. Then when Bush came in, it sure looked like he was expressing his preference for tax cuts, and there were an awful lot of people around who were saying these tax cuts were too large, that we couldn't count on the deficit, the surpluses lasting forever, and that turned out to be right. So I think that's a case where he got away from his knitting, as it were, where he was a very successful mechanic on the whole, and when he got into legislative work, we saw, at least for some of us, a push in the wrong direction.
for some. E.J. Dionne, always great talking with you.
It's
thank
great
you.
To talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us this morning. Philip Swagel and Robert Solo, please stand by. We're talking about the changing of the guard at the Fed. You can join us. How do you see the big challenges for the U.S. economy now? And can the next 18 years be as good as the last, the Greenspan years? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about replacing a giant at the Federal Reserve Bank, talking about Alan Greenspan, the new nominee as Fed Chairman, Ben Bernanke, and the future of the U.S. economy. You can join us with budget deficits, trade deficits, a shrunken industrial base. What's the Bernanke challenge here? With a globalized world, is Ben Bernanke facing an all-new challenge? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined in this hour by Nobel Prize winner in economics, Robert Solo, professor emeritus of economics at MIT, and from Chevy Chase, Maryland, by Philip Swagel, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, formerly chief of staff for the White House Council of Economic Advisors, where Ben Bernanke has very recently been sitting as chairman. You can join us as well. David's calling from San Francisco. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey, it seems to me that the real challenge to Bernanke and through Bernanke to the rest of us is that this man has lived totally, it seems, in the rarefied atmosphere of Ivy League economics departments, Harvard, graduate school at Yale, and then in Princeton.
You want somebody off the waterfront. What do you want, David?
I want somebody who has, I'd love to have somebody, it seems to be impossible, who's been outside of these upper class circles and has some idea what his decisions will, how his decisions will affect ordinary people, working people, people out there in the hinterlands in both the red and the blue.
Mm-hmm. Right down where they're working, and maybe those wages are being squeezed. David, thanks for your call. Robert Solo, how about it? You know, there's a big conversation about what's happening to little folks. Big folks have done just fine in the Greenspan years.
I agree that not only the chairman of the Fed, but the whole of the U.S. government, the federal government, and its economic advisors need to pay attention to what's happening on Main Street and not just on Wall Street. I don't see any reason why the fact that Bernanke was educated in high-class economics departments limits his ability to do that. He adapted very quickly to policymaking when he was on the board of governors of the Fed before, and now at the Council of Economic Advisors. We do have to see how he handles this. Any monetary policy decision depends on a kind of relative weight that you give to inflation on the one side and to how the economy is doing for workers and the unemployed. On the other, we know that in each of the past 4 years, the poverty level in the U.S. has got worse. Mm-hmm. That matters. That's an important thing. There is not a whole lot that the Fed can do about that, but you would like to see some attention being paid to that. And I don't see any particular reason why a guy like Ben Bernanke, who grew up in a small town in South Carolina, I suppose that counts for something. I don't see any reason to suppose that he's hoity-toity, that he is, in fact, just the opposite.
It's a pretty gilt-edged resume there. I mean, David wants some kind of evidence of, you know, the smell of the herd, the sweat of the brow.
Well, if you got too much of that, you'd have very little education about what monetary policy can do.
Maybe.
I don't think it matters what you smell like. It matters much more what you think about and what your values are, and we're going to have to see that about Bernanke. But I certainly wouldn't write him off simply because he's been well-educated. That's a very valuable thing for a Fed chairman.
Philip Swagel, what about this issue of who and how many Americans are ending up, you know, in deep gravy these days? Does that concern, should that concern properly extend to the Fed chairman and the nominee and his sympathies there? Do you see him? You're at the American Enterprise Institute. It's conservative, yet you've seen, like Robert Solo, the poverty numbers in the last 4 years. We've all watched the income gap, the wealth gap over the last more than 4 years. Should that be something very much on the Fed chairman's mind?
For sure it will be. And I think there's a sense in which David in San Francisco can be reassured. If he goes to the Fed website and reads some of Bernanke's speeches, he'll see that you don't need a PhD, you don't need to go to an Ivy League school to understand what Bernanke's been talking about. And in that way, you know, he's just an excellent communicator. He's going to speak to all Americans. And the issues you raise, income inequality and poverty and wage growth, that's exactly it. That matters for all Americans. And, you know, we know what the most important driver for wage growth is, and that's, you know, Professor Solo won a Nobel Prize here, productivity growth. We've had two upticks in productivity growth, one in the second half of the 90s, and then an even stronger gain in productivity growth over the last four and a half or five years or so. And in some sense, that's the challenge for the economy, is how do we make it so that the gains in productivity growth affect everyone, that wages rise with productivity growth. That's, in some sense, that's the challenge for policymaking. I have some ideas on how to get there, but I'll stop here.
How to spread it around. Finbar's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Finbar, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I'm just tired of hearing the subject being discussed at the usual eloquent but very superficial level. The truth of the matter is that the Federal Reserve is the greatest swindle that has ever been projected upon the American people and indeed upon the world.
Finbar, you've got a Nobel Prize economist here. We'll go wherever you like. What's your gripe?
Well, and, you know, we need to have a look at the Greenspan situation and the Federal Reserve. The truth about the Federal Reserve is that it is not federal and there are no reserves. And, you know, he was an eloquent spokesman for the gold standard, and he was a very severe critic of the system's subservience to the banking cartel. That was back in 1966.
But here, Greenspan had a fairly effective run. We had a pretty good economy. So what's your... Is it a theoretical complaint with the Fed? The economy did pretty well under him.
Well, we had a lot of, booms and busts. But, you know, it was only when he became chairman of J.P. Morgan and became chairman of the Federal Reserve that he became very silent on the issues that he'd spoken about before, because he didn't want to offend the creature that he was working for. And talking about the creature, it's the creature from Jekyll Island, which is where the Federal Reserve was started in 1910. And it should be compulsory reading for every American to read The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. They, you know, people will never be the same again. They will realize what exactly is going on, instead of hearing all these so-called educated voices talking in the upper realms of the atmosphere. We need to get right down to the earth.
You're saying it's a shell game here. Finbar, thanks for your call. Robert Solow, what about this fundamental critique of the Fed that keeps coming back in the American conversation?
I don't think it does, and I haven't heard a fundamental critique, not from the caller. If he's a gold standard person, then the gold standard discredited itself long ago. The gold standard depended in a very radical way on creating deflation when the economy was strong. And deflation is not something we lived through very happily. Mm-hmm. The last time we did that was the 1930s. Thank you. I would not like to. That was when I was a boy. I'd not like to have that again. There's no swindle about the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve operates in the same way that fundamentally in the same way that every central bank around the world does. There's no reason to suppose that the free market, we're all believers in the market system, but there's no reason to believe that the money supply can be controlled by the free market in an effective way. Under the gold standard, the world economy is at the mercy of the annual production of gold. That's not necessarily a good regulator. I don't I don't think there is any such debate at all. We're doing reasonably well. We make mistakes. We sometimes get things right. That's human. And the question is, can Bernanke continue making a very small number of mistakes?
In a world changing dramatically. Charles is calling from Boston. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Charles. You're on, my friend.
Yeah, I think that Mr. Greenspan did a noble job in his last past 18 years, or let's say last 15 years. But I think he got hoodwinked by the Jekyll of Jekyll Island, Mr. Bush, and he should have maintained his same program he had with Clinton, because right now we are in a total great deficit and we have no way of getting out of it. And the Chinese literally own America, and America is talking about going in and supporting Taiwan. And if they do that, I don't think Greenspan or this new guy who's in power is taking into consideration that China may end up calling for their money, or international bankers may end up calling for their money, and we may be into a world spin of a world depression, and America may become a third world nation within the next 4 or 5 years if we're not careful.
So the real chairman...
I don't think this guy coming in here can really handle the problem. But you're just putting a Band-Aid on the sore.
Yeah. We got it, Charles. Let us look at it. Robert Solow, to you again. Charles says maybe the real Fed chairman is sitting in Beijing where so much of the American debt is owed these days. What about that? Do you see a reduced capacity to really steer the ship as that debt grows?
Yes, I do. I think there's some truth to that. The Chinese have been running a surplus with the rest of the world because it's this enormous low-wage economy mm-hmm. that can export easily. They have chosen to buy American Treasury debt. That debt is there because of the Bush administration's policies. The Chinese have no particular interest in making trouble for the U.S. Economy, but they're not market people like us. I do think there is in the background a worry that they might decide they don't want to hold all that Treasury debt. If they start to sell it, then Bernanke and the Fed are going to be faced with a real problem, because the natural tendency would be for, if the Chinese start fleeing from dollar assets, mm-hmm. the natural tendency would be to raise interest rates in the U.S.
Right.
That might not be what our economy wants, and there will be no perfect solution to that. We have to, I think, that Bernanke has the brains and the will to steer a reasonable course there and do the best that we can. Yes, I wish that the U.S. was not running a large trade deficit. I wish that the U.S. government were not being financed by the Chinese central bank. Those were policy mistakes that we made. They weren't the Fed's mistakes particularly. But now we have to live with that, and we have to live with that as best we can.
Philip Swagel, how do you see that picture? Do you see a soft landing for the United States out of this kind of distended position it's in right now? Of course, the fear is it'll be a hard landing, very high inflation, and a real whack to the economy. What do you see looming out there?
Right. I mean, certainly there are risks, but I think the best chance is that we will have a soft landing, just because the underlying strengths of the economy, strong productivity growth, and the attractiveness of U.S. assets. In some sense, if the Chinese sell off, they're going to be hurting themselves most of all. I think this also relates to the tax cuts and fiscal policy that have been commented on a number of times. You know, like everyone, I wish we had a smaller budget deficit. You know, on the other hand, can anyone imagine what the economy would be like without the tax cuts that we had, in particular without the 2003 tax cut that gave money back to households and reduced the tax on capital income and led firms to start investing again? Can anyone imagine what the economy would be like without that? Now, having said that, we still have a fiscal problem, but it's important not to lose sight of the forest for the trees, right? The Bush tax cuts together, 2001 and 2003 together, are equal to about 2 percentage points of GDP. In the future, entitlement spending is projected to go up by 18 percentage points of GDP. This isn't something new. This is something we knew in 1998, in 1999. So in the long run, our fiscal position is deeply, deeply in difficulty, and this is no different than it was in the late 90s, even when we had a near-term budget surplus, which was a great thing. So the real fiscal challenge, in some sense what Charles is really getting at, is entitlement spending. And there, you know, the president has been very courageous. You know, I'm not talking about personal accounts, but the president proposed to move towards solvency in Social Security by cutting Social Security spending that goes to rich people.
Robert Solow, our time is short. We've got to put that piece to you. What about the tax cuts and the ultimate locus of responsibility for the economy, the Fed versus the political arm of this government?
Well, I disagree fundamentally with that. There are two things. The Bush administration was faced with two choices. It could try to make a cut in entitlement spending, or it could hold off providing a large tax cut for the rich. Either one of those things would have improved our fiscal position. I know which I would have preferred to do. I would not have returned an awful lot of federal revenue to the well-off people. We could have had, I can imagine what the economy would have been like had we not had those tax cuts. We would have had a slightly easier monetary policy. We might have had alternative choices of taxes, and I think that the economy would have survived. But that's water over the dam now. Mm-hmm. We have to decide what to do at this instant. And by the way, the Social Security reforms proposed by Mr. Bush would have done zilch, absolutely zilch, for the fiscal problems of the Social Security system itself.
So what about Mr. Bernanke? Can you imagine him in the months and years ahead coming out as Alan Greenspan did? Because, of course, there are more tax cuts to be discussed and suggesting that there's ample room for more tax cuts. Or will he be mum on that?
I don't think he can possibly be mum, but I think he can have a much lower profile than Greenspan had. Politicizing the Federal Reserve System is bad policy. Part of the advantage of the Fed is that it's independent, or it's supposed to be independent of the administration in power and looking at the economy in an unbiased way. My guess is that Bernanke, you know, he's not going to keep his mouth shut when the Senate Banking Committee asks him questions, but I don't think he's going to seek the kind of high profile that Greenspan did, and will allow our fiscal policy issues to be debated in the Congress and the administration where they belong.
And where that responsibility, I guess, ultimately lies. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I want to thank both of my guests in this hour. It's been great having you. Philip Swagel, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Terrific to have you join us. Thank you very much for being with us this hour.
It's my pleasure.
And Robert Solow, professor emeritus of economics at MIT, winner of the Nobel Prize for Economics. Professor Solow, wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for coming on today.
Thanks a lot for asking.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jupp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, Mary Moore, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Matt Odette and Vince Fairchild. Our senior producer is Joe O'Connor. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.